our means of communication. In a world which speaks English nowadays, if you are not on the scene with this methodology, you are not able to put that across your idea, you're not able to make yourself understood. We have a lot of work to do, but overall, I think there are positive steps.
Thank you very much. Amer DiMartino, University Lecturer in Islamic Studies from London. We appreciate your statements.
You're watching Press TV's live coverage of demonstrations and events that are happening across Iran today on the 31st anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. I'm your host, Tomal Ezdi, and joining me now in the studio is political commentator and journalist Mr. Nader Mukhtari. Mr. Mukhtari, we were listening to some analysis there on the Islamic nature of the revolution. What I want to ask you is, how did the revolution influence the meaning of Islam, the concept of Islam, and how it could influence a revolution, even a government, a state of affairs in a country?
Well, do you have time?
briefly, if you can.
Well, what is central to the administration in Iran is a belief and a faith in the presence of God. Now, the Western countries were writing this off as mysticism. Whereas our answer to the West was that, would look around you, everything you have is designed for your living. Why is it so difficult to believe that a mighty being designed everything to be the way they are? So a belief in God is central to what we do in Iran, and we are trying to bring about the sort of just international society, not just in our country, the sort of justice that the world, humanity has been thirsting after for thousands of years.
So, looking at the achievements of the Islamic Revolution, 31 years on, what are the points that you see we have achieved? And very important for you to say, is what are the stuff that we still have to get to? What are the points that we still have to get to?
Well, we have a long way to go. Imam Khomeini made us duty bound to strive for bringing justice to the world. So we have a long way to go. I'll give you an example. The British democracy, or so-called democracy, took 300 years to build. Democracy is not something that can be injected. Islamic democracy needs time to develop and go forth. I'm not talking about technology, I'm not talking about, putting satellites into space or cloning of animals. I'm not talking on that level. I'm talking about a humanity, a movement within human society toward a better future, so that everybody's children can go out and play in the sun unafraid of bullets and bombs, not just ours, everybody's, so that everybody's children on this planet can go out without the fear of prejudice or religious or oppression or political oppression. We're not doing this just for Iran, we're doing this for everybody. And America could not believe, and Britain, they did not believe that we would have the staying power, because they had dominated Iran's politics in such a way that the Iranian nation would tire of any movement within one generation. But we mean to stay here. And the gentleman, Mr. Lam in Beirut, talked about American attack. Mm-hmm. Now, they go and build a film about a Greek fairy tale called 300. I'd like to tell the world now that there were 278 Hezbollah defenders against a 30,000-man Israeli army in southern Lebanon. They died to the last man, but they defeated the fourth best army in the world. Now, according to the Americans, Hezbollah in Lebanon is trained by Iran. They are going to be for a surprise if they're foolish enough to think that there is a military solution to what to Iran. The U.S. would I advise the U.S. administration and the Zionist lobby to lower their voices, understand their position, and approach Iran with the respect that is due to this country. Otherwise, they're going to have, they will be brought to a position where they would have to run to the United Nations to get an order for a ceasefire, just so they can get 30,000 soldiers out, defeated by 278 men.
Yes, so you did refer to those threats against Iran that we were speaking about earlier, which Mr. Lam did mention, yes, of course. But I was going to ask you your opinion about these threats. I mean, we remember the eight-year war with Iraq, between Iran and Iraq, and it just happened when Iran was trying to reconstruct after the revolution, and it just made everything worse for Iran, and you know, just the loss, the human loss, the construction, the reconstruction efforts. So how did that affect the revolution, the course of the revolution, and how did the U.S.'s and many European states' support for Saddam affect Iran's relations with them and their relations with Iran?
Well, the fact of the matter is the very people who are today shedding crocodile tears for fatalities in the disturbances, post-election disturbances, actively supplied Saddam Hussein with the weapons he required, chemical, biological, to kill Iranian children. My generation was wiped out. Out of my class, there were two survivors, and one of them is me. The other survivor, he fought in the front, and he's missing a lung, and he's a chemically wounded veteran. If they care so much for Iran and Iranians, and if they're so upset about what's happening to this country, why should they go and supply weapons to Saddam Hussein, whose only aim was murdering people who stood in their way, who stood in his way, on his henchmen's way? In the end, he was the dog they had to put down themselves. All their enterprises of great pitch and moment have gone to nothing. They have gone to nothing. They have come to nothing. But the eight-year war created an essential epic for Iranians, a point of reference, a point at which Iran stood against more than 37 countries who were helping Saddam Hussein. We fought off single-handedly a world war, and we had nothing to give other than our children. My generation were killed, were wiped out. And I could sit here and say, well, it was a major tragedy, but it has created the sort of strength and the momentum for the fight for justice to carry on, and as Mr. Lam put it, to find its way into all other societies. Justice has been central, seeking justice has been central to Iranian society, irrespective of the presence of Islam. But it has been furnished with the strength of Islam, and it will carry on.
So do you believe that when the Americans did support Saddam Hussein during that time, they were actually hoping that maybe they could see the overthrow of the Islamic establishment in Iran? And if so, are they still hoping that that may happen? Or if not, then why are they using the technique of pressure and sanctions? And
the thing is that they were using an age-old British tactic. They were taking out a generation and creating a gap. So people of my age are not around in order to be able to pass on the epic to the younger generation in Iran. And through that crack of taking out one generation, so that you're taking out the paternal generation, and the youth will not go and listen to their grandfathers. You know, there's just too much distance. By creating that crack in the society, they were hoping to put their plans into action much later. Mm-hmm. At a later date, it was one. Also, they had no idea that Iranians would be able to fight so well. Again, taking over the oil-rich provinces in Iran is nothing new. It was a British plan which was formed in the mid-19th century. At least the Americans thought, if we cannot defeat Iran at that time, we can at least take away some of their resources. And that didn't happen, and that failed. Mm-hmm. So the aims are quite clear. Iranians can no longer be fooled.